Welcome to Parents Perspective. Molly's mom was trying not to lose her temper. 4-year-old Molly was going to be late for preschool because she insisted on changing her clothes the third time that morning and on wearing her mittens on the hottest day in May. Meanwhile, her sister, 6-year-old Megan, slid happily down the stairs, clutching her book bag and announcing, "I'm ready to go, Mommy!" She presented her mother with a lined tablet full of loops and squiggles and declared that she had been practicing her very own script. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our children in this busy developmental period between ages 3 and 6? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're in for a special treat today as our guests are internationally recognized experts here to help us understand 3 to 6-year-olds. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, Clinical Professor of Pediatrics Emeritus at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Pediatrics and Human Development at Brown University, has dedicated his life to helping children and their parents. He has established Touchpoints centers in more than 30 communities in 21 states. He's a famed advocate for children and their parents and has written books that have sustained parents through their child rearing for several generations. Dr. Brazelton has 4 grown children and 6 grandchildren. That's still accurate, right?
Yes, as far as I know.
Welcome, Dr. Brazelton.
Thank you.
Dr. Joshua Sparrow is Dr. Brazelton's close colleague in the National and International Touchpoints programs. A child psychiatrist, he is supervisor of inpatient psychiatry at Children's Hospital in Boston, on the faculty of Harvard Medical School, and associate director of training at the Brazelton Touchpoint Center at Children's Hospital. He has a daughter and a son. We're so glad to have you with us, Dr. Sparrow.
Thank you for having us.
Now that you've written Touchpoints 3 to 6, Your Child's Emotional and Behavioral Development, what would you most like parents of children in this age range to know?
That their surface behavior is only surface behavior. Underlying it are some very important mechanisms that are going on that I think parents really need to understand in order to deal with them as they come up. The reason we call it touch points is that there are these times just before a spurt in development when a child falls apart and the parent falls apart with them. And those are very, very important times to understand what's going on in the child rather than getting mired in failure and misery and anxiety and so forth, because the child needs the backup of the parents and the parents need to watch the child and listen to them.
The touch points are stressful for everybody concerned, right? Mm-hmm.
They are, but they're also very important times in a child's development.
I'd like to add to what we hope parents know 2 things. The first is that parenting is a process of trial and error.
Everyone who's out there is so grateful to hear, because they're all thinking, good, because I've made so many mistakes.
That's right, and
so
if you're not making mistakes, then you're not parenting. And that's how you learn. And it doesn't end when your children get past 6 years of age, that's for sure. And the second thing is for parents to know that their passion for their children deserves to be valued, whether they're going to professionals who help them take care of their children or to healthcare providers. They deserve to have their passion and their expertise with regard to their children valued.
Well, I even think that the mistakes that parents make are like touch points. They may be the most important time in a parent's learning about how to parent, because you really learn more from a mistake than you do from a success. And you go back and try it again, and you learn, and the child learns. So mistakes can become very important times in both parent and child.
Thank you both for that.
Right. When Linda and I talk, people think that somehow we're supposed to be these great experts who never made any mistakes. And we say, goodness, that's how we learned anything, is we made lots of mistakes.
Our so children can tell you that.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, today on one show I was doing, they said, you give advice to parents. And I said, no, I do not give advice to parents. If I do, it's inadvertent, because I don't think that's the way parents learn to parent. I think what I like to think we did together was to give parents some insight into what children were thinking, how they were working through these 3 years, and give them back the the expertise that they already have about that child to put together with the child's behavior and make it work.
It's almost like a puzzle, isn't it?
Oh, it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. Never stops being fascinating.
Back to touch points. Would you give us some examples of the touch points so that parents sort of know what we're talking about?
You might want to start with an earlier touch point because I think it demonstrates the concept so clearly. You know, the touch point of the child who's getting ready to walk.
Well, we've been working with child care around the country. We got a chance through Governor Hunt to work with child care in North Carolina. His brilliant Smart Start down there is just so wonderful. It's an example of what we could do if we had the motivation all over the country to give parents back excellent child care, daycare, and make it available to them. And so one thing they kept saying, and I think this has been true with all of the efforts around the country, was that parents wouldn't come in for parenting classes, or they wouldn't come in when they were needed and so forth. And so when we started working with them, we became aware that the most difficult thing about child care is what I call gatekeeping, that anybody like a daycare person who cares about a child is bound to be gatekeeping with the parent. And the parent is bound to be gatekeeping with the child care person. That it's just a given that two parents who care about the same child or two adults who care about the same child are going to be some unconsciously shoving the other out. This goes on in schools. It goes on particularly in daycare. So one of the things that we've done is to show this up by saying to a child care person, suppose you said to the mother of a 12-month-old, is he waking up at night? And the mother would say, why, yeah, how did you know? And she would say, well, he's working so hard on learning to walk up and down all day that I thought he must be trying it out at night too. And the mother would say, oh my God, she not only understands my child, but she cares about me. And it brought cement to these two people who cared about this child. And they became a team, which is what it really should be. But it also brought up the touch point of learning to walk, how expensive it is to everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the family goes to pieces when a child's up and down all night and screams at you all day. And I think the touch points in early childhood are easier to understand and more, maybe more sort of like a map than they are between 3 and 6, because they're these processes that are so valuable that are going on, take longer, and they're not as predictable about when they come up.
And I would also add that in the first 3 years, there is the relentless force of the maturing nervous system, which brings about, at least in part, some of the big developmental events like walking and talking, which are parts of touch points for families. But as children get older, some of the events are driven by the environment or driven socially. So that one example of a touch point for a 3-year-old that we use in the first chapter in our book is of a 3-year-old boy named Billy who goes through the experience of having a baby sister be born. So obviously this isn't a part of every child's life, but it's a part of many children's life. And the way in which the child experiences this developmental crisis and the way the family responds depends on whether it's a 3-year-old having a baby sister or a 6-year-old having a baby sister. But nonetheless, it is an example that we use where this child loses ground, slips backward, starts wetting the bed again, which was something that he hadn't been doing for a good long while, as a way of his letting his parents know that he was actually getting ready to grow into being a big brother. And of course, as a part of this touch point, the parents became disorganized as well and had to struggle to be able to face their own sadness at having to spread themselves to meet the needs of two children before they would take the step ahead, which is to recognize that they had not lost their relationship with the first child by bringing another child into the world, but they had given the first child a brand new relationship by giving him a baby sister.
So at a touch point, everyone sort of takes a step or two backward before they leap forward, the children
exactly.
and the adults involved.
Right.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on 3 to 6 year old children.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow about raising 3 to 6 year olds.
Think how valuable is a sort of energy system that is, that you can pull back, get energized, reorganized, and be ready for the next big expensive step, like having a sibling.
I guess the trick is for parents in this kind of crisis situation to realize that it's a growth time. It's not the end of the world. It's not mm-hmm. terrible. It's just an opportunity for reorganization.
Very important, because I think these are also the times when things get set, when they start lying, stealing, which a child automatically does at 4 and 5, trying to make the world come out the way they want it. If a parent, just goes to pieces and puts too much pressure on lying or stealing, they can set it as an issue. I can remember when I stole a fire engine for my little brother because he was sick. And, of course, I hated my little brother, but I thought I'd try to make up for it with his fire engine. And my mother just went to pieces. I've never forgotten the look on her face and the sort of fury that she brought to this. And we had to take it back to the store, and I had to apologize. It's one of my most frightening memories still.
We hope the store owner isn't listening at this point.
You needed National Trading Day, which is what I invented when I wanted things my cousin had.
National Trading Day. That's wonderful.
You have to tell that story.
My cousin and I, my cousins and my brother and I lived next door to each other the whole time we were growing up. And my cousin would get a new toy. She was exactly my age, but I might like it. So I invented National Trading Day, and I would go to her house with some old thing, and I would say, "Hey, Phil, it's National Trading Day. Here, give me your toy."
How long before she hooked up?
She figured it out fairly, fairly soon. But she
now negotiates with labor unions.
She does. She got early training.
So she turned it into something useful.
I think so, and we are very close friends now.
That's wonderful.
I wondered if it would be belaboring the touch point of becoming a big brother to have Barry say what he says to every mother who comes in excited to announce that she's pregnant with a second child. It's a great story, and I think it really illustrates the idea not only of seeing that in the child's regression there is this preparation for a step ahead, but understanding that the feelings that go with that, both in the child and the parent, need to be made room for. And instead, often the tendency is to see them as bad news that we have to turn away from. And I think that your story really makes that point so beautifully.
You're on.
Well, thank you. Eric Erickson was the one that alerted me to this. And he said, no parent ever feels like they have enough to go around. Don't expect it. Don't look for it. And sure enough, every time a mother would come into my office and say, guess what? I'm pregnant with my second child. I'd say, aw. And she'd say, aw, what? Aw, you're deserting that first child. And she'd start weeping away. I could always make her cry. And, I think this needs to be revived all the way through, because I think a parent never feels like they've got enough to go around. And so it keeps them from really thinking about what that older child that Josh described was going through, because it's just so painful. And rather than doing the things that you need to do, which is to prepare the child ahead of time, let them know who's going to be there for them, because that's what they're the most frightened of. When she goes away, who's going to take care of me? And then also, when she comes home, bring something that the child can play with while she plays with her new baby, and make some special times for that child so that he knows she hadn't deserted me completely.
And I think as parents, we feel so guilty about pulling away from the first child to involve ourselves in the dreams about this baby that we're waiting for, that when the older child actually lets us know that they're angry or they're miserable, we just hate to see it because it confirms our sense of what a terrible thing we've done. And I think it makes it harder just to welcome the child's expression of those feelings and acknowledge them as necessary and understandable. And so instead, because we feel so badly, we run the risk of minimizing them and pushing the child to be a big boy when he may really need to feel like a little boy who can be loved a lot too.
I have three grown-up sons, but the oldest announced when his younger brother arrived home. He said, I can't imagine why we needed him.
I hope you let him.
Quite hard to do it.
Do you know, the other day we were taping a radio show that was live, and we had the wonderful good fortune of having a 7-year-old girl call up with a question. And she had been told, keep it a secret until you ask it on the air. And the question was not, how do mommies make babies, but why do mommies make babies?
Great. That's wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
How would you answer that?
Oh, dear. My oldest, when he was awaiting the birth of the second kid, and some well-meaning adult said, would you like a little boy or a little girl to come live at your house? And he said, well, a girl, of course. We already have a boy.
Isn't that lovely?
This poor child that got the other brothers.
He got three brothers. Oh, my gosh.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on 3 to 6-year-old children.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow about their new book, Touchpoints 3 to 6.
What's the biggest trap parents of 3 to 6-year-olds fall into in dealing with their children? I know there are lots of them, but is there one you'd particularly like to highlight?
Well, I think one of the biggest surprises for all parents is that part of our job is to have to frustrate our children and to say no. And I don't think anybody dreams about having a baby because they're just dying to have that opportunity. And so as a result, I think that that's one of the biggest adjustments to make as a parent, is to be able to recognize my child needs me to say no. My child needs me to frustrate them at times and to not give in despite it being painful to watch them be frustrated, and to help them through that while continuing with the limit that I've set. And I think that that trap is particularly important for parents who are working harder than ever, actually. We had thought with all of the technological advances that we'd be working less and having more time for our children, but it's not what's happened at all. So that when you come home and you've just really been missing your children all day and you want to have a good time with them, and then they do something where you're really forced to let them know this is not acceptable, this can't be tolerated, and then you have to put up with their pulling on you and letting them know how frustrated you are. It's so hard to hold that line when you've been so deprived of just having fun with them. So I think that the trap is even more serious for us as our time is so much more limited that we can devote to our children.
I find I have to tell parents, discipline is the second most important thing that you give a child. Love comes first, but right on its heels comes discipline. Selma Freiberg, who wrote the most wonderful book of this age group called The Magic Years, said that a child who doesn't get discipline, clear discipline from parents, doesn't feel loved. And I think that's something that really surprises parents, and they need to be reminded of it, because as Josh says, when they're away all day, they don't want to be disciplinarians, and yet the child is just saved it up all day long to get that confirmation that the mother is in charge and is going to say, this is where it stops. And I think this is why discipline is a way of re-cementing at the end of the day rather than you know, avoiding it, which is so easy to do.
I think that's another very reassuring tip for parents, because I remember reading that. Selma Freiberg's book was right next to yours when I was raising my kids. And I remember thinking, it never occurred to me that you're showing a child love by setting limits. Mm-hmm. But you find it out as the children are growing that they respond to it that way.
Can't you remember, though, when you say no, you've got to stop here, and the child looks up at you gratefully? I think this is the most...
You're saving them.
If parents can see that or look for it, then they can feel like, oh.
They look at you with relief.
Yeah, they do.
You know, there's another important message from Selma Freiberg's book that we wanted to transmit in this one, which is another trap, actually, that is inevitable that we fall in, which is responding to the ghosts in our nurseries. That was her term. And the idea is that we learn to parent not from books, but from how we were parented and from the important experiences in our lives that we've been through. And sometimes children will find a way of calling up whatever those past experiences were. And then the trap is for us to act on something that is being recalled from the past rather than acting on what the immediate needs of the situation and the child are then and there. And one example is what you talk about so well, Barry, when you talk about one parent turning to another and how powerful the temptation is for parents to take personally this natural touch point that we see during this period of 3 to 6.
But one of the big touch points in 4s and 5s I always get a phone call in the morning from a mother who says, she won't pay any attention to me. She just acts like I'm not there. And all day long, I try to give some directions, and she doesn't. She just won't take them. And all she does is hang at the door and wait for her daddy to come. And the second he comes in, she climbs in his lap, and she pats his face, and she just teases him in the most terrible ways. I'm so embarrassed by her behavior. And, you know, what she's saying is something that's so important to kids at this age. They're trying to try out all of their mother's wiles and to capture their father's. And, of course, you can say to her, which is true, wait till next month and she'll turn against her father and turn to you. But I think what really needs to be said is that this child is learning one parent at a time. And it's too costly to learn about both parents at the same time. So as an economical way of doing what Freud called the Oedipal thing, why they begin to tease one parent and leave out one parent and seduce the other parent and find out, you know, what each of them is made up of. And it's a fascinating process, but boy, do parents feel left out of it.
We want to thank Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow, authors of Touchpoints 3 to 6, for joining us today and helping parents everywhere learn to deal with their 3 to 6-year-old children. Thank you.
Well, I hope it does. Thank you for having us. This is so much fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Washington, D.C., with kids and parents as mentors, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about us and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.